Hey guys, and welcome to the Rocket Jump Film School podcast Office Hours. And today we're going to sit down with John Carman and Jake Andrews, who are the creators of the Ruby Dog channel and This Week at Rocket Jump. And they've done a bunch of different fun, crazy, weird shorts for us. And we're just going to talk about how they got started, some of their old work, and how they created This Week at Rocket Jump. And just fair warning, we talk about some weird things. So if you're a little queasy, maybe not. Maybe, you know, be careful. So let's get into it.
Rocket Jump Film School, scene one, Apple, take one, Mark.
All right. Hey, guys, and welcome to Office Hours, the Rocket Jump Film School podcast. And today we are talking to the creative team behind Ruby Dog and This Week at Rocket Jump. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Jake, and I work on This Week at Rocket Jump, co-member of Ruby Dog.
Hey, I'm John. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
This is John. Yeah, John Carman.
Just John.
Hashtag John Carman. Yeah. If you guys want to live tweet this podcast, just hashtag John Carman. So,
John Carman without an H and with a K.
Yeah. Let's be correct about this.
Sure. So, you were actually, John, you were telling me a fun story about how you guys actually first met up and started making movies. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's like weird. We were like, both of our families happened to be like, we sat at the same lunch table, but we didn't ever talk to each other.
This was high school?
Middle school.
Yeah. And then both of our families were vacationing in Santa Monica, coincidentally. This is so like we went to school in Westport, Connecticut, but then our families were vacationing in Santa Monica, and then like we just like ran into each other in the street, and we're like, oh hey, like I kind of know you. We sat at the same lunch table. That's weird that we ran into each other, and so we started hanging out. And I think Bad Boys 2 had just come out, so we were just like, how sweet was that bad guy death? The end of Bad Boys 2, he gets shot in the head, and then he falls into a landmine. Like that's like the coolest thing we'd ever seen. So we didn't. Because we both agreed on that.
We saw the second Tomb Raider film together.
Yeah.
In theaters. And
it was our air conditioner.
We both thought it wasn't very good. And the rest is history.
You bonded over a movie you both loved and the movie you both hated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of your best friends.
Yeah. We're like, all right, we got pretty good taste.
All right. Yeah.
We're both little film snobs. This is perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you guys, like, we have a lot of listeners who are kind of in the same position, like younger high school students or just getting out of high school. Like, how did you guys start making movies and what started shaping your sensibilities? What was the first project you made together?
It was Delivery Boy.
Oh, God.
What's
Delivery Boy? Of course, it was a gangster film.
Obviously.
And I hadn't gone
co-starring Jake and I.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know. We didn't have any friends. Pretty much.
Yeah.
We had some, but like, it was pretty much the other kids that at our lunch table that started it.
Yeah. yeah, this is me before I went through puberty, too. Very high voice. I was a gangster.
There's a scene where Jake, like, ambushes me or whatever and, like, steals my stuff. And literally, because we had no friends, I'm holding the camera selfie style, playing myself as Jake like sneaks up behind me
and robs me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was another scene where we basically recreated the torture scene in Reservoir Dogs.
Oh my God.
Where I'm getting tortured.
Yeah.
And we had like, there's a scene where like the guy who's torturing me goes up to like the radio and there's a DVD copy of Reservoir Dogs like right
next
to it. That's
what we thought homage meant.
Yeah. We'll do an homage to Quentin by having the DVD to Reservoir Dogs. So yeah, needless to say, it was awesome.
And he slices and dices Jake while he's alive, set to like cool techno music. Like, yeah, it was pretty. We were
jazzed on it though. And then we had another like the big bad guy, death gets his brains blown out.
The main bad guy. We want the main bad guy to have a goatee, so we literally took a brown marker and we just grew a goatee. Well, we thought it was serious,
we thought it looked good too.
Yeah.
We were like, this is good. Let's make it.
Until we saw it in a close up on film, and then we were like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and the salsa was, guys, did you mention that?
Yeah.
My mom was like really nervous.
We had to put saran wrap around on the door,
yeah,
before we could throw salsa at it.
Was it salsa or was it marinara?
It was salsa.
It was salsa. Salsa?
It was chunky salsa.
Chunky
salsa. Didn't really splatter well. It just kind of like hit one little ball.
Yeah. But yeah, we made that and we learned. I know every time you make a big project, you learn from your mistakes and you,
yeah,
you improve. A lot of failure. Yeah.
But it was like, we were doing stuff, this was pre-YouTube, and then we just kept making videos together, and then like around, like in between sophomore and junior year of high school, YouTube first came out. And so there were like smaller sites that would let you upload stuff, but never to like that, there was never anything that mainstream. Mm-hmm. So after YouTube came out, it gave us like an outlet to really like show stuff to a lot of people, and ended up, you know, we kind of got a little famous in our high school because we were like one of the first people to like ever kind of like use YouTube to regularly, and that's like how we kind of like made connections in our high school because people had saw our videos and wanted to be in them or help out or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So what are the big questions we get with people just starting out? You mentioned that you guys didn't have any other friends to make movies.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah. Kevin, you're my friend. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Kevin.
You don't have to confirm or deny that. Sure. It's fine.
Oh, geez. Kevin, you're my one friend, right? Yeah. I mean,
sometimes. <Just leave>. How did you guys get a crew together? How did you... And then I know you eventually did that huge project that involved almost your entire school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how did you get...
Our first feature film.
Yeah.
We didn't really have... It was really... The crew... It's literally the crew has not changed since... Like, I mean, like, if there's a budget involved, you know, then I can have a crew. But if not... Like, this week at Rocket Jump barely operates on a budget. You know, so unless like it's like Ball Pit was an exception because, you know, they were
like Laser War. There's a budget on that, right?
Yeah, but I mean, even that was just like barely. And there's like 90% of Laser War is just carried through on favors or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your crew look like right now, usually?
It's literally just me with a shotgun mic mounted on top of a camera, you know.
Then he'll tell me to do stuff for him.
Yeah.
Like hold this light.
Yeah.
Be still.
Act.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, having a crew is nice, but yeah, and most of the time it's just I'm trying to do like as many roles as possible at once.
Have you gotten to work with a larger crew before?
Yeah, like on Ball Pit.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely the first, like, I think, pretty sure that was the first time I had like a major kind of crew, like producer and AD. And
that went well too. You didn't have like a mental break.
Yeah, well, I mean, it helped because I think part of my strategy was giving Freddie one of the biggest roles in it. So if I ever was like kind of screwing up, Freddie would through sheer proximity have to help me out. You know what I mean? So that was nice to have him kind of catch me when I was stumbled or whatever on that shoot.
What was the big difference between having a full crew and having like your usual just two-man team?
It definitely feels more like work. Like we have to get through this. There's mm-hmm. way more people waiting on you. Whereas like if you're kind of like just shooting with your friends, you can kind of just like take your time and hang out, and it feels a little more like it just feels more like you're just hanging out with friends rather than you're at work.
Yeah.
You know, in Ball Pit, it's like we had to wake up super early and, you know, and
that sucks.
We had to get like shoot like 6 pages a day or more than that. It was like 8 pages. So yeah, it was just very, very demanding on everybody, you know? So it definitely didn't have the same kind of, like, I mean, that's, I prefer generally the, you know, the laid back, small, tiny crew, tiny shoot thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you need to get a lot done, you have to kind of do the more professional big crew thing.
Yeah. Well, and that was a big shoot too. It was a big short.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was insane. We had a whole team of people dedicated just to cleaning up the balls when we were finished shooting and stuff. Or even just like on standby to like rake the balls if because like they would fluctuate in terms of the height and depth or whatever. So yeah, that was insane getting that much, like, you know, people to work with me on that.
That was awesome. Yeah, I think it came out really well.
It turned out.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite things that we got to work on, for sure.
That's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit more about this week at Rocket Jump and getting to kind of form your own little show? And I know that's wrapping up pretty soon, right,
too? Yeah. Yeah, I think we only have, like, when does this go up?
This is in, like, a couple weeks.
Okay.
Week or two.
So, yeah, by the time it'll be, like, probably, like, 3 episodes left by the time you hear this. Yeah, so we're getting ready to bring the show to an end and then create a new show. But yeah, so your original question was just kind of
so
like,
what is this week at Rocket Jump and
well, yeah, it was essentially like they wanted second channel stuff, you know, and they didn't really know what they wanted. They just kind of wanted me to think of something, and you know, it's traditionally kind of documentary, kind of behind the scenes type stuff. So, and my background, I mean, I've done a little bit in documentary, but most of my experiences with shorts, so I was trying to kind of like, I was like, what if it kind of felt like a documentary, but then it would slowly become a short every time. So that was like the idea behind it. It was almost like, what if it was like almost like The Office but with Rocket Jump, but it was like way crazier than The Office, and a lot of times it would become like a action film or whatever, horror film. So
anything with violence.
Yeah, that's my forte. Yeah, anything that's gross or weird,
bread and butter.
Yeah, so. They were skeptical at first. They're like, really? I mean, like, people at Rocket Jump aren't really actors, you know? And but I was like, I know everybody at this point pretty well.
Right.
No. I hope not. I hope. No, I mean, I was like,
I'm
felt like.
It sure. I'm just going to be mean.
Yeah.
You're a good guy.
No. It's like the roast of John, it feels like. Right. But, yeah. So, I felt like I kind of knew everyone well enough that I could like kind of play on their strengths, and if I and cast them the right ways, it would, you know, wouldn't feel too amateur hour. So I think we pulled it off, you know. Got some good performances out of people.
Yeah.
Jamie in particular.
Yeah.
He became a little kind of mini Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's a big Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise
the
is
episode,
the little Tom Cruise.
Introducing Jamie is one of my favorite ones because you just build up this huge thing about this guy who sounds like this douche bro. And you're just like, who is this weirdo? And then you cut to that like really quiet, he's in his office and he's like, yeah, I just, you know, crunch the numbers and make sure the lights stay on. I have to be an adult.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's really, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it kind of makes him look crazy. And then it's like, wait, no, everyone he works with is kind of crazy. He kind of works with a bunch. I think the line he says is the only adult in an office filled with children. And that's fairly accurate, I would say.
I think Jamie's the grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah. He dresses
most of the
like
time.
The grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
More than me.
What would you say you guys have learned the most doing this week at Rocket Jump?
I don't know. I mean, just every. It's hard to pinpoint one thing. It just feels like practice makes perfect. Every time you make a new thing, you just kind of, you know, get better at sound design or writing or whatever, you know. And some are better than others, I think. And you kind of learn from the mistakes you make along the way. And yeah, I just think that's my general philosophy. Is everyone's just trying to. You just get better your whole life, you know. You never stop. You know, you never just get good and then plateau, you know? Every time you make something, you get better.
Try to, at least.
Yeah.
Yep. So what would your advice be to young filmmakers who especially want to get into comedy? Because you guys do kind of this crazy, wacky comedy type feel, and that's extremely hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think definitely my advice would be to go out and just constantly be making stuff and failing a lot. Like, that's a huge part of it, honing your craft. That's something that can be daunting to people, like being like, you're going to fail and a lot of the stuff you're going to do is not going to be that good, and that's tough to accept that, but once you do, yeah, you can start to make funny stuff and also watch funny stuff all the time. There's a lot of great things on television, like Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Watch that show. If you want to watch that show.
Yeah.
If you like comedy, just watch it.
It helps to have like someone you're working with and you're not just on your own though, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jake and I, we can like bounce ideas off each other. If we make each other laugh with an idea, then we know we're onto something. It's
probably,
you know,
something.
But sometimes like the ideas is that you think could be really funny and then you pitch it and it like kind of just gets nothing. You're like, oh, okay, wait, that doesn't work as well as I originally thought. And if you don't have someone to bounce an idea off of, you could like, it, you know, it could be too late before you find out that it wasn't a great joke or an idea, you know? And mm-hmm. So I would recommend, you know, making friends. You know what I mean? That would be my advice, you know?
Wow, what a yeah. Sure. Down.
Try to make friends.
Yeah. Hopefully you have a friend that wants to do the same thing and, you know, and you have similar sense of humor, you know? So that's mm-hmm. pretty much what I would advise.
Find a friend.
Yeah.
Don't let them go.
But we can't tell you how because it's not Rocket Jump Friends.
Yeah.
School.
Yeah.
It's Friends School. Oh, God.
Well, we should make a new one.
Can we start that?
Rocket Jump Friends School?
How to get friends?
Legally, just a way for us to get sued.
I don't know. So, is there one like specific idea that you guys have been tossing around for a while that you still haven't been able to make? Is there like that one?
Well, there is one that I don't think we're gonna have time to make, but it was where, you know, Charles Barkley.
Yes.
Probably the best actor at Rocket Jump.
I think so, by far.
But we're going to do, yeah, this thing where Dez finds out that he looks into like what two breeds came together to make Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, like getting the blood work back and stuff, they realize that Charles has a father who like lives like outside of Burbank. And they would go and like visit Charles's dad, who is just going to be Charles like wearing like a hat. And basically Charles would decide to live with his dad and like it would be like Dez all depressed and like,
oh no.
But I don't think we'll have time to make that one.
We are doing one though.
We are doing,
we won't spoil what it's about, but
it's Charles, it
Charles
Dez.
And Dez.
Yeah. And we didn't want to do two Charles Dez.
Yeah. We've kind of,
we can make a show with Charles and Dez.
You could,
or just Charles. I mean, like, if pretty much this week, Rocket Jump is just Charles Barkley. I mean, like, anytime we run out of ideas or we just need, like we just use that dog as a crutch because it's literally, that's like the most easy dog to work with in the world. It's pretty cute.
He's so funny such looking. A good, he's really good to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another advice for people going to look
at. Dogs, you have can a be
cute,
friends too.
You have a cute dog you that's easy to work with, just use that and you'll probably get successful in some manner on YouTube.
Just exploit a dog and you'll probably get famous.
Yeah. That's not my only advice.
That's my advice. That's buy a cute dog and exploit it.
Yeah.
God.
Sounds ominous.
I mean, I've known someone who
exploits dogs.
Oh, God.
That word is correct, but it's so wrong.
He adopted a dog just so he, like, he could be so like walking. Like, he,
oh,
he imagined that like he would just be, he'd be walking. He'd just be walking a dog and some girl would be like, oh, it's such a cute dog. Like, here's my phone number. And so he adopted this adorable dog. And then when he realized that wasn't the case and that women weren't just going to throw themselves at him.
He's like, I don't want this dog.
He just gave it to our other friend who became inseparable. You know what I mean? And raised it all the way to its tragic death, but I won't get into that.
Was it tragic?
Was it
a tragic death?
God.
It was. It died. It got hit by a car, but let's not dwell on that. It had a happy life.
The dog is dead.
That's the express Uber to heaven.
The dog was abandoned and then it died, you know?
No. It had a happy, he had years of happiness with, like,
a happy dog.
It was like through an act of extreme selfishness, someone got, you know, they're a best friend out of it, you know. He and that dog were inseparable until it died.
Until they were separated.
I feel like a lot of this week at Rocket Jump, this podcast has turned into a weird morbid.
Yeah. any morbid dog stories? I'm sure you got plenty.
Oh no.
Tell us
no.
your I, super sad dog story.
Maybe this one's too much. Maybe I won't.
Oh no, please.
No.
I had
Okay, well, afterwards.
I've got a crazy...
Off air. You got a crazy what?
A really terrible dog story. Do you want to hear it? Or we don't have to.
I think our listeners are going to be like, this crazy dog story.
Okay, so Jake. My social studies teacher in high school, he lived in somewhere in Asia for a few years, and he thought he was going to live there for a really long time with his family, so mm-hmm. he thought, like, well, I'm going to go and get my daughter a dog. And they went down to this market, and there is this group of puppies, and the little girl, his daughter, pointed to one of the puppies, and the guy literally, just like without batting an eye, this guy who had the dogs, takes his puppy and smashes its brains in front of him and his daughter.
I'm so sorry, Lauren. Yeah.
So that's my.
Has his daughter ever recovered?
I don't know. He said she was traumatized.
I would never recover.
It's because he was assuming they're going to eat it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was basically my story. He just lost his mind that day. But to put it into perspective, there's, of course, a ton of culturally ingrained resistance to the idea. But basically, pigs are as smart as dogs.
Yeah, we're done. No, they're cleaner as well.
Yeah. They don't taste as good. Or dogs don't taste as good as
well.
Pigs.
Have you ever had a dog? Have you ever eaten dog?
We'll talk later.
I'm so excited.
This is derailed.
Can I kind of pose a question based on an observation?
Please.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I've noticed, because I've done sound for a few episodes of this week.
Yeah.
And you guys have the most edit revisions out of, like, anybody, like, where the cut just keeps mutating.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about that as you guys not knowing what you're doing, but just as a benefit. You know, like, you were saying it's great having a partner, someone to talk to about your ideas.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, in general, creatively, your first idea is never going to be the version of it that works.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these things we're saying, like, it's good to, like, work with friends, yada, yada, yada. It really just means the more you can test your idea along the way, I think the more you can kind of improve it. But I think editorially it's interesting because a lot of these shorts, you know, this week will have a lot of reshoots or a lot of tweaks made to it. And I think, just if you have any thoughts on that, I think, you know, it, like, my perspective on it is, like, you shouldn't get too locked in. Like, okay, we shot the movie, it's done, now we got to cut it. You should, you know, if you can, try to be flexible. But I'm just talking for John Carman now.
No. I mean, I definitely appreciate how cool you are with the insane. Because usually...
I'm so drunk.
Yeah. Usually it's just like, you know, when you're supposed to lock the cut and you deliver for sound and that's it. And me, I'm just crazy nitpicker of my own stuff. And I'm constantly coming up with, like, new ways at the last second to, like, make things better. And so I'm giving Kevin just all these, like, this insane list of time codes of stuff that's, like, shifted or whatever. And, you know, I feel like most sound people would just quit, but you...
Is that ever informed by the sound? Do you ever get a draft from me and it's like, oh, be good if we change the cut around that? Or am I just getting...
No, I mean, like, the sound certainly, like, it sounds certainly, like, adds jokes that I didn't know were there. But yeah, it's mostly just, like, pacing things. It's like, oh, this scene would work a little bit better if this moment was drawn out a bit more, or if this was shorter. Because, you know, you're constantly, it's like, especially with comedy stuff, like, you just have to constantly be showing it to people, and mm-hmm. you're just seeing, it's like, it's when you're just editing on your own, you really don't, it's hard to really know how it's playing unless there are people in the room watching it. And then you can just kind of, like, instinctually tap into how well things really are working. You can just kind of just tell through people's reactions or the way they're watching it, you know?
What are you looking for when people are watching?
Well, beyond just, like, basically, like, laughing at the right times, you can just tell, you know, sometimes they're, like, there'll be, like, too long of a space between, like, a laugh, you know, and then maybe people will, it'll just be like someone delivering exposition for a really long time and people kind of start fidgeting a little bit. You can just, mm-hmm. I don't know, you just, when you, just, you can just tell, you can, I feel like with movies above anything, you know, you're having an experience, you know, and you can just tell how people are reacting to that experience. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the closest thing, you know, art form to, like, having a dream or an actual, you know, moment in your life. And so you can just tell how people are reacting from a moment to moment basis. And you just got to keep in mind, you just got to have a good understanding of, you know, people in general, I think, to be a good filmmaker.
Yeah, I think that's just a good observation, you know, off like, you know, the process. But I feel like a lot of times when people start making films, and, you know, like basically everyone's guilty of this, quote unquote, but it's like a lot of times people will shoot and then they edit and then it's like, my film's done and I'm super proud of it. But that's like their first super rough cut in a way. And I think something that you learn through experience probably is how much you need to be able to admit that, I didn't make the perfect choice the first time. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you were saying that earlier.
The script, too. Like, that's very, I mean, I know people who spend like a year writing like their first draft and be like, I'm done. Be like, no, dude, you've just started.
Yeah.
Like, this is a first draft. Like, good writing is rewriting. Like, that's a big thing that I'm getting feedback.
Everything
that's,
evolves.
That's huge.
Everything evolves.
Like, step one is like, write your draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, hating yourself is a really good tool in filmmaking.
Well,
you know?
Constant self-doubt and yeah, just being like, this is terrible. You know, I don't. This is not just if, being hard on yourself. Yeah, depression would be. Yeah, it's just called common, but it's good.
But the thing is, no matter how good you are, it's always going to be bad at first. So you can't, as long as it doesn't cripple you. As long as it's like, I'm going to make it and it's going to suck at first, but, you know.
Yeah.
You
got
to make sure that, like, you have to separate yourself from a bad draft. It's like, if you write a bad draft, it doesn't mean you're a bad writer. It means you wrote a bad draft and that you can start making it better.
Yeah. I was actually just listening to an interview with the director of Menace to Society, which was like a huge hit in the 90s, but he said like when he saw like the first rough cut, he would just, the tears would be rolling down his face because of just how bad it was to him and how much he hated it, you know? So it's like he didn't know in that moment it would go on to be like this like cultural landmark film, you know? He just saw, all he saw was just like this, oh my God, I wasted like over a year of my life making this terrible thing, you know? And you just kind of have to learn to, you know, except that it's not, it's just going to be terrible when you first watch it, you know? I mean, same goes for Ball Pit. That was such a mess, you know, trying to wrangle that edit, you know? Luckily, it's also tough to edit your own stuff too, you know, especially if you wrote and directed it and then you're editing it too. You're just kind of, sometimes it's really great to have, if you can have someone else edit your stuff, that's sometimes really great because, I mean, I edit my own stuff out of necessity, but like on Ball Pit, since we had like a bigger budget and more time to really make it great, like I did the first rough draft and I hated it. And then I had Freddie kind of take the reins and watched him, you know, really kind of spruce it up and take it to the next level. And, And he, you know, because he wasn't as attached to the material as I was, so he could just kind of, like, make it sing.
Yeah, and, like, what people might not know is, of course, there were probably dozens of versions of Ball Pit before the release version came around. And by the time, you know, we got near the end of it, there were reshoots. You know, there were scenes that were reshot. There were some scenes that were shot later just out of necessity.
Yeah.
There was stuff that was cut that really helped. Like, because at one point I was in Ball Pit, and then, you know, that montage. And, like, I'm glad that's gone, because I think that improved it. But I feel like whenever you have to, you know, come down and be hard on yourself and reshoot or re-edit, that's not like you failed the process. That is the process.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That does mean you're doing it right.
Yeah. And even it's like, even when it's done and you feel like, okay, this is great, it's finally finished, and you release it and everything, there are certain scenarios or just films I've made where it's like, I just spent so much time making it as perfect as I could, and then when I watch it when it's done, I'm like, man, this is still use a lot of work, you know, and it's just, it's never done. And it's sometimes like I tend to be a perfectionist or on stuff, and you just kind of gotta learn to live with the fact that, like, you know, good is good enough, and just kind of move on, you know. Don't dwell.
A finished movie is better than a perfect unfinished movie.
Yeah,
movies are never done, but this podcast is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
we got
the signal.
Up.
We gotta wrap it.
Got the hand signal over here.
Are we gonna have to cut the morbid dog stuff?
I don't know yet.
No.
Benji's like, no, we're gonna
taste like lamb.
Well, are all your early Rubidog movies still up online.
Yeah, viewer beware, especially if you like dogs, you might see some upsetting stuff on our channel.
Yeah, there's a lot of really upset. Like,
we went through an esoteric college phase. We were just like, yeah, let's see how far we can take this comedy.
That's
just
a fancy way for saying you murdered puppies.
Well,
no,
I haven't seen.
Yeah, I don't want to go into detail, but yeah, just be beware. There's some really gross, crazy stuff on our channel.
Yeah, you guys are
RubyDog 189.
Yeah, RubyDog 189. One of the things we're hoping to do with, possibly with Rocket Jump Film School, is actually have like a week where we show all of our old student films, like different people in Rocket Jump, so we might do something like
Rashomon
that.
Rashomon 2, dude. Oof. Oh my god. No, that's a masterpiece. I don't care what anybody says.
I am now super interested in this.
God.
But we gotta wrap it up. Yeah. So thanks, John and Jake, for coming and just talking
about yourself for
a little bit. And, yeah, we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.